The excerpts you will hear today are from a 1956 EMI Classics recording featuring Maria Callas as Amelia, Giuseppe Di Stefano as Riccardo, Tito Gobbi as Renato, and with Antonio Votto conducting the orchestra and chorus of La Scala. Special thanks to EMI for letting us use their recording. I love the fact that plotters and assassins are always bases. What is it about that sound that makes you think of dark corners? Maybe it's that all those notes are at the bottom of the staff, a visual equivalent of hiding in the basement. If conspirators lurked in attics, I suppose they would all be coloraturas. Riccardo, the king or governor or count or whatever he is naturally a tenor, and his faithful page Oscar, who presents him to the assembled crowd, is a soprano.
Soldati e voi del par diletti a me.
We learn two things about Riccardo almost immediately. First, politically, he's a good guy. Bello il poter non è che dei soggetti le lacrime non terge. Power is not good if it cannot dry my subjects' tears, he announces. And second, he's in love. Riccardo is throwing a masked ball, and Oscar needs to review the invite list with him. The governor lightly asks if the page has left off any beauties, but he's really only interested in one, Amelia. The mere mention of her name throws Riccardo into raptures, but listen carefully to the aria that follows. Verdi was a master at writing great choruses. He had already written them for Nabucco, Macbeth, and Trovatore. Having choral sections in big arias was routine, but here the composer uses an established form to convey simultaneously the contradictions on stage. Riccardo is overcome by love. Some of his courtiers see him daydreaming and admiringly credit him with pondering great affairs of state. And others, the conspirators, wonder if now is a good time to further their ambitions. Everyone is thinking something different, but you hear all their thoughts blended into one piece of music.
La rivedrà nell'estasi raggiante di pallore e qui sonare.
Riccardo's secretary, Renato, thinks his master looks sad. He doesn't know that the reason is that Riccardo's love for Amelia must remain unrequited. Amelia is Renato, the secretary's wife. Oops. Renato tells Ricardo he does know the reason, which scares the daylights out of the governor, but he doesn't know. So far, Renato is clueless. Being not just Ricardo's secretary, but also his friend, Ricardo has come to report rumors that there is a plot against the governor's life. The governor must take quick and decisive action. Ricardo answers that justice and the love his people bear for him will protect him. He does not wish to know the conspirators' names because then he would be bound to punish them, and he does not want blood on his hands. Renato is not convinced, and in a baritone aria, musically very reminiscent of Germont in La Traviata, he begs the governor to think, if not of himself, at least of the safety of the state. Ricardo does not even respond to this warning. He can't. He's too busy. The primo giudice, the chief justice, has come to make a report on a sentence of banishment, and as governor, Ricardo must receive him. It sounds from the music like the justice is a bit on the pompous side. At least he likes ceremony.
Il primo giudice s'avanzi.
All that music is a lot of time for the judge to make his entrance, but it's good. It gives stage directors something to do. The condemned woman is the fortune teller Ulrika. When Ricardo questions the judge about the sentence, Oscar comes to her defense. Oscar is one of the 19th century's really great trouser rolls. He is a bright spot in an otherwise fairly dark evening.
Sua pupilla quando le vedo.
I'll tell you one thing that gives away how young Oscar is. Remember, Oscar is trying to defend Ulrika. His free admission that Ulrika è con Lucifero d'accordo ignor, is in concord with the devil, is perhaps an argument a good defense lawyer would omit. Ricardo decides this all merits further investigation. It might be fun to dress up as a poor fisherman and go to Ulrika's cave and see her for himself. The judge is scandalized, Oscar is delighted, and the conspirators realize that maybe this little entertainment will give them a good chance to do some real mischief. Listen for the time at which this is all going to happen, alle tre, at three. Every time someone says alle tre, there's a little pause, as if they're all going to synchronize their watches. Sounds like a madcap adventure, doesn't it? Don't be so sure. Ulrika's cave is spooky. Like Azucena in Trovatore, Ulrika is one of the great creepy mezzo roles that should be its own Fach. Even in the recording, you can just hear her sitting by the fire invoking the devil.
Oh.
Balo is in three acts, and you remember that the Count agreed to meet everyone at Ulrika's at 3 o'clock. Now, we just heard Ulrika explaining that the owl has cried out to her 3 times, the salamander has hissed 3 times, and 3 moans have been heard from the grave. I'm not sure which grave, since this cave seems to be where Ulrika lives, not some deserted graveyard. I get the sense she's not much of a housekeeper, so after you visit her, you might want to wash your hands. But what's with all the threes? I don't really know, but I'd like to imagine that Verdi and his librettist were thumbing their noses at the censor. Remember, this opera was supposed to be about Gustavus III of Sweden. I'm sure there are lots of better explanations supported by actual research, but I'm going to stick with this one. Ricardo arrives before his courtiers and decides to have a bit of fun with the fortune teller. Ulrika's first customer is Silvano, the governor's boatman, who is upset that after 15 years of faithful service, he has nothing to show for it. I have one explanation for that. If this was set in Sweden, as it was supposed to be, the idea of Ricardo having a personal boatman would make a whole lot of sense. Gustavus III's capital city of Stockholm is built on a series of islands. A boatman in Stockholm would be a chauffeur anywhere else. No wonder Ricardo never noticed Silvano. How much yachting would you want to do in winter in Boston Harbor? Ulrika tells Silvano that he will soon be recognized for his service. So for fun, Ricardo takes out a purse of money, writes a note of thanks, and slips it into Silvano's pocket when the sailor isn't looking. Silvano finds the note and reads it aloud to the crowd, who are very impressed. For the record, Silvano does not say that he's been working for the governor for 15 years. He says he's been working for him for 3 lustri. A lustro in Italian is a 5-year period, like a score in English is 20 years. Ulrika's second customer is a more serious case. Amelia has come for a consult, and when Ulrika chases all her hangers-on out of the cave, Amelia admits that she is hoping for a magic spell that will make her forget her love for Ricardo. Ulrika says she can do it, but to make it effective, Amelia must herself go to the graveyard at midnight and pick a magic herb. Amelia promises to go, and Ricardo, who has been eavesdropping, determines to follow her. But first, a bit more fun. The courtiers have arrived, and without revealing his identity, the governor presents himself to Ulrika and asks her to tell his future. "You will die by the hand of a friend, and soon," Ulrika reluctantly foretells.
Mi lascia non chiederti più.
Su, prosegui.
No, lasciami.
Parla, parla.
Te ne prego.
È difficile ormai.
Ero in banca.
Ebbi, presto morrà.
Se sul campo d'olore ti son grato.
No, per mondo non è.
Ah!
Ulrika goes on to explain that Ricardo's killer will be the next man to shake his hand. The conspirators are terrified that they have been betrayed and refuse to take the governor's outstretched hand. Renato apparently thought the rendezvous was at 4, because he only now shows up. Seeing his friend with his hand out, Renato grasps it. Convinced that Ulrika's prophecy is false, Renato would never kill his best friend, Ricardo reveals his identity. He pardons and rewards Ulrika and receives the cheers of his loyal subjects.